This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Well, we are awaiting the imminent arrival of the latest Gaza Freedom Flotilla.
Ooh, which is Greta on her way?
Greta is indeed on her way. The ship that is sailing is called the Madeleine. And it's set off from the Italian island of Sicily, from the port of Catania, not too far from where Mount Etna was erupting, I think, almost at the same time. Mm-hmm. But they are apparently on their way. Not only Greta, but we also have a Game of Thrones actor, Liam Cunningham, on the Freedom Flotilla. And we understand that it is their intention to dock in Gaza. Now, they are carrying, according to the reports, baby formula and nappies and flour and rice and water and all kinds of medical equipment. I'm not quite sure how much they could fit on the boat.
Yeah, it's not a big boat.
And how that sort of compares to the huge amounts of aid that are pouring into Gaza consistently. And so I think, obviously, this is all just very symbolic more than anything else. And I think an attempt to confront Israel and to make Israel decide what they're going to do about this particular flotilla. Now, we all remember the Turkish Mavi Marmara incident, which ended in disaster and was not the way that things should be dealt with. So we've learned our lesson, I hope, from that. We also recall the attempt to set off a few weeks ago. That, I think, was from Malta, if my memory serves me correctly. And that boat actually was sunk before it even left harbor. So that ended in a disaster from that side. But now, of course, the ship is sailing. And it has these high-profile individuals who are very active on social media and have made sure that photographs have gone out and all kinds of tweets have gone out in order to support this view. And the Israeli government will need to decide how they're going to respond to this. Now, there was a school of thought that said, let them dock in Gaza. Why do we care? Let them go to Gaza. Let them dock there. Make their way, do whatever they wish to do once they get there. The problem with that, of course, is that it creates something of a precedent. And if you're going to allow one ship to do that, the chances are is that a whole bunch more are going to be following very, very soon afterwards once you set a precedent. And then, of course, you've got this little issue of people like Greta and Liam running around Gaza with their phones and things like that. And who knows where this will begin and end. So I think the current view is that they will not be allowed to dock in Gaza and potentially not even in Israel. I'm not sure exactly how this is going to be dealt with. I do recall that a previous attempt, and it was probably a couple of years ago, to send a flotilla to Gaza was intercepted at Israel's territorial water boundary. And then the ship was escorted into the port of Ashdod, from where the aid that was on the ship was transported to Gaza. And the individuals were transported to Ben Gurion Airport to send them on their way home. That was the way that that was dealt with. And it wouldn't surprise me if a similar approach will be adopted on this occasion, to say, like, you've brought the aid, we'll let the aid go through, no problem. We've got no issue with that. You, however, will be on your way home as soon as possible. So we will see how all of that pans out. We're expecting the ship to come to enter into the territorial waters within the next few days. So, of course, we will all be watching very closely to see how this is being dealt with. I understand that Israel has developed some sort of a plan, a strategy. We are not being told what that is. And of course, that doesn't surprise me. But I guess the listeners will have their views about how this should be dealt with. And there was someone who tweeted, I hope that Greta has practiced her breaststroke. Yeah, I think that, you know, we need to be very, very cautious here, because there are high profile individuals, and whatever happens to them, doesn't matter what it is, will clearly be highly publicized. So therein lies some of the risk. Of course, as I've said a few times, Israel has no issue letting the aid go to Gaza. There's much, much, much more aid going into Gaza than their ship could ever hold. So it would really not make a massive amount of difference. But of course, the danger is that these individuals will come along. And ironically, they're arriving exactly during the whole Gay Pride Week event that will be going on in Tel Aviv. I've already seen the Gay Pride
flags. So I wonder if they shouldn't just join that. I think that would be amazing to let them join that.
Well, it might be an interesting combination of events coming together, but I suspect that the Israeli government would like to see them leave sooner rather than later. So we will be watching eagerly, and I'm sure everybody will have their comments about what they think the Israeli government should do about this.
So what should they do? 0618951019. It is obviously performative. Everybody knows that it is performative, but that aside, it has potential danger because of the public nature of the stunt. What do you think Israel should do on 0618951019? The U.S. has vetoed a resolution at the United Nations Security Council, one that calls for an unconditional ceasefire in Israel, in Gaza. What is the significance of this?
Well, I think there are three things that I think are significant. The first of which is that the Security Council is discussing this. They've forgotten about Ukraine. They've forgotten about many other things that are going on in the world. But I get that this is an issue and probably does warrant some discussion at the UN Security Council. I think the second piece of significance is that 14 countries who are members of the UN Security Council voted in favor of the resolution. And it's only because the United States, which has a right of veto at the United Nations Security Council, voted against the resolution that it wasn't carried. Otherwise, it would have been easily passed by the Security Council of the United Nations. And of course, we've had the famous statements that are being made by the United Nations Secretary General, who once again reiterates the fake information that people are being killed at food distribution, aid distribution points, of course, blaming Israel. It is unacceptable, says Antonio Guterres, that Palestinians are risking their lives for food. And then he fails to call out who it is that is causing these risks to their lives. And the answer is Hamas. Criticize Hamas. Call out the perpetrator rather than leave it in a way that gives everybody reason to understand that Israel is at fault, because of course the resolution is indirectly criticizing Israel for not stopping the war effort in Gaza. Now, the reason that the United States has given for not supporting the resolution and in fact vetoing the resolution is because it calls for an unconditional ceasefire without talking about the fact that hostages need to be released. And I do believe there was some mention of the release of hostages, but the two really need to be joined together unequivocally. You can't just say, well, we want both things to happen and they're kind of independent of each other and there is no real link between the two. There is a very firm link. And the firm link is that the war will not be over and there will not be a ceasefire until the hostages are released. And that is the precondition. Of course, Israel also has the desire to destroy Hamas. But I would suggest that if some sort of an arrangement was made for the release of the hostages, that the war would be over almost immediately at that moment. And so that is really the weakness in this United Nations Security Council resolution, which doesn't say the ceasefire should be predicated upon the release of the hostages. There should be some sort of a quid pro quo. It just simply criticizes Israel for not stopping the war effort. So again, the fact that 14 countries saw fit to support that resolution without it being conditional upon the release of the hostages shows that the world might want to recognize that the 7th of October was a tragedy and that Hamas was to blame for that particular event. But they seem to forget that that event is still part of what's going on right now. And somehow the linkage has been lost. You know, that was the 7th of October. And yes, you know, we very much criticize the attack that was carried out and the people that were killed. But now you need to stop the war. Well, the two things are linked. And what happened on the 7th of October is still rolling. And to be fair, and Howard, you probably would have picked it up, we still are not over it by a long shot. We are still very, very far away from actually still understanding and internalizing and trying somehow to deal with the events of the 7th of October and what's happened since then. And until this war is over, we're not going to be able to have the opportunity, the benefit of stepping back in, looking at it from a little bit of hindsight, and then being able to process exactly what happened. So, you know, I think we need to remember that certain things are very much firmly linked. This war is linked to the 7th of October, and ceasing the war is linked to releasing the hostages. It's not too difficult to understand that, surely.
No, and it's not particularly complicated. The government is being considered, to be on the brink of collapse. That's after some of the ultra-Orthodox parties threatened to withdraw from the coalition. So what is the point of contention here?
Well, it's the underlying major issue in Israeli society today, to be honest, and I think it's becoming more and more of an issue, and that is the issue of the conscription of ultra-Orthodox youth to the army. And currently, in the most part, those ultra-Orthodox youth are enjoying an exemption from being called up to the army. This is an exemption that was agreed upon by Israel's first Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, in 1948, with the then representatives of the ultra-Orthodox parties, who said and who agreed with Ben-Gurion that those ultra-Orthodox youth who are properly enrolled in institutions of religious learning will be exempt from the army. Since then, those institutions of religious learning have expanded astronomically. They've had massive increases in the number of institutions and the number of youth attending those institutions. There's also been a government funding of those institutions. So what effectively we find is that a secular or a modern Orthodox young man or woman, when they reach the age of 18, will be called into the army, and they will give at least 3 years of their life to serve as a conscript in Israel's army. The ultra-Orthodox youth do not do the same thing. They go off and join a yeshiva, an institution of religious learning, and not only do they not serve the country, but they also get a stipend from that yeshiva, which is financed by the government. So those that funding has also been a major point of contention because of the massive amounts of money that the government is currently siphoning into supporting those people who are in these institutions of learning and who are not doing anything to support the country. Now, during the course of this war, it's become clear that the army needs feet on the ground. We need to recruit additional people to help with the war effort. And the ultra-Orthodox parties are digging in their heels, and they are not willing to agree to allow their youth to be called up to the army, in spite of the fact that the army has gone a huge distance to accommodate their lifestyle, to create special units for ultra-Orthodox conscripts, to allow them to eat the food that they want to eat, to allow them to observe the traditions and the rituals and the daily routines that they wish to observe, to add in learning programs to allow them continue to continue their religious learning. The army has accommodated all of those things in order to get more boots on the ground, to get more conscripts into the army, which we desperately need. So now the moment has come. The agreement should have been reached at the end of last month to somehow find a way to allow the religious youth on a gradual basis to be incorporated into the army. The ultra-Orthodox parties are digging in their heels, saying they don't want to agree that. On the contrary, they wish to get this exemption extended, even though the High Court of Justice has had its say on numerous occasions to say this is not okay, this is not acceptable, and that any law that's passed to continue the exemption will not be will be frowned upon by the courts if an objection is brought to the court. The court has ordered unequivocally that the government find a way to include the ultra-Orthodox youth into the army. Prime Minister Netanyahu has vacillated on this issue because, of course, he very much depends, in order to continue to be prime minister, he depends upon the support of the ultra-Orthodox parties. In order to get that support, he has generally been favorable towards allowing the youth to continue to be exempt from the army, in return for which they've been very happy to give him support. But now the moment has come. The prime minister has appointed Yuli Edelstein, who is the chairman of the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, and he has been appointed to manage the negotiations on behalf of the government. And the ultra-Orthodox parties are threatening to leave the coalition if they are not able to extract a further exemption for their youth from the army. Now, is the government really on the brink of collapse? I think not. And I think not because the prime minister clearly doesn't want the government to collapse right now. And if the country had to go to an election, the chances are that neither Prime Minister Netanyahu nor the ultra-Orthodox parties would be returned back to governing coalition. So they both have a great deal to lose if the coalition is brought down right now, potentially a great deal to lose if the coalition is brought down right now. And I don't think either of them really have it in their interests to go to an election. So I don't really see this huge threat that the press has been trumping up, saying the government is on the verge of collapse and it could happen any moment. But I do think time has come for the ultra-Orthodox youth to be integrated into our army, or integrated into a system of national service, whatever that might
whatever
be.
Whatever it means.
They don't 100%. Want to go to the if they don't want to go to the army, then I get that.
Like religious young women who choose not to go to
exactly.
The army.
There is a program of national service. I think everybody should be obliged to do that. And that will be the best way to somehow smooth out some of the cracks in our society.
That is where we leave it. I couldn't agree more. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom. And we'll catch Anthony on Monday morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
This is 101.9 High FM News.
In the headlines this hour, U.S. President Donald Trump signs travel ban on 19 countries. Argentina to launch a direct LI flights to Israel. And remains of missing journalist Aserin Glovo and partner Zotram Luli confirmed. This is High FM News. Good morning. In your international news, President Trump signed a travel ban targeting 19 countries, citing national security threats. Fully restricting entry are nationals from Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. Partially restricted are individuals from Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela, with some exceptions for visas, diplomatic, and family members.